VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. The U.S. State Department says Secretary of State Antony Blinken pressed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in talks on Tuesday to capitalize on the killing of Hamas's leader by securing the release of the October 7th attack hostages and ending the war in Gaza. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
During his talks with Netanyahu on Tuesday, Blinken spelled out U.S. hopes that the death of Yahya Sinwar, Hamas's leader, will provide a new opportunity for peace. But Netanyahu's office has made no mention of any potential ceasefire yet. For its part, Hamas has refused to free scores of hostages seized on October 7th of last year, without an Israeli pledge to end the war and pull out of the territory. Hours ahead of Blinken's visit, air raid sirens sounded in Tel Aviv, signaling incoming rockets from Lebanon. Hezbollah later claimed responsibility for Tuesday's attack, as well as a drone attack on Netanyahu's holiday home on Saturday, adding that there would be no negotiations while fighting continues.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. U.S. State Department spokesman Vedant Patel said if North Korea sent troops to Russia, it would mark a dangerous and highly concerning development.
We are, of course, going to continue to consult with our allies and partners on the implications of such a dramatic move. Certainly, if true, it would be another reckless and dangerous action, both on the side of Russia, but, of course, on the side of the DPRK as well.
South Korea's spy agency said last week that North Korea sent 1,500 Special Operations Forces to Russia this month, and South Korea Tuesday warned it could consider supplying weapons to Ukraine in response to allegations that North Korea dispatched troops to Russia. This is VOA News. The Kremlin said Tuesday that Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese President Xi Jinping discussed Ukraine and other global issues during a meeting on the sidelines of a BRICS summit in the Russian city of Kazan. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen has more.
Russian President Vladimir Putin called Chinese President Xi Jinping his dear friend as he praised the relationship between their countries and welcomed Xi to Russia for the opening of the BRICS summit. Xi told Putin that chaos reigned internationally, but that Beijing's strategic partnership with Moscow was a force for stability amid the most significant changes seen in a century. In May, the two leaders pledged a new era of partnership between the most powerful rivals of the United States, which they cast as an aggressive nation sowing chaos around the world. A Kremlin spokesperson said Putin and Xi discussed Ukraine, their partnership, and ways to cooperate in the future.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. U.S. intelligence officials warn Russia and Iran may encourage violent protests in the United States after next month's election. According to a newly declassified memo, Russian military intelligence sought to recruit an American to organize protests in the U.S. Iran has also covertly supported protests in the U.S. over the war in Gaza. The memo released on Tuesday says both countries may seek to organize or encourage violent protests as a way of undermining trust in election results and eroding national unity following a contentious campaign. Fears that America's adversaries could seek to fan the flames of polarization have increased since the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Residents in Acapulco, Mexico, are struggling to rebuild their lives 1 year after Hurricane Otis killed dozens of people and caused widespread destruction. Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaprin has more.
Entrepreneur Joaquin Salgado says residents are still struggling.
El impacto, creo que todavía lo seguimos.
We are still living with the impact. We have not overcome it economically or psychologically. It has had quite an impact on us. Acapulco, as everyone knows, was pretty much devastated. Everyone had losses.
According to the Guerrero state government, over 220,000 homes were damaged. Compounding the disaster for the city and Guerrero state was Hurricane John in September. Local media says at least 18 people were killed when the storm hit, many due to landslides that crushed homes.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaprin. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Egypt, Ethiopia, and South Africa attend the 16th BRICS summit in Russia.
It's important because it offers Russia to avoid isolation from the U.S. It also provides for the Global South to have its voice heard, and also for some new members like Ethiopia that have joined.
Turkish-Egyptian reconciliation aims to soothe Libya tensions. Press freedom takes center stage at the annual Global Leadership Forum. Election observers arrive in Botswana ahead of the October 30th poll. President Chakwera urges Malawians to register in numbers amid a dispute over voter ID requirements.
Whether you already know which candidates you support or have not yet decided, I call on every one of you who is eligible to vote to register when the voter registration exercise comes to your district.
And union endorsement play an enormous role in the upcoming U.S. presidential elections. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The 2024 BRICS Summit, the largest foreign policy event ever held by Russia, opened in the city of Kazan on Tuesday. The three-day summit includes 36 countries, with over 20 represented by heads of state. The Associated Press reports Russian President Vladimir Putin has positioned the BRICS summit as a counterweight to the West. For more on the summit, U.S. Douglas Mpuga reached political analyst David Monda.
It's important because it offers Russia to avoid isolation from the U.S. and from the West more generally. It gives Vladimir Putin an international stage on which to advance an alternative agenda to the neoliberal orthodoxy of the U.S. and Europe, to show that there are other games in town, preferably the Russian game, the Chinese game. But it also provides for the Global South more broadly to have its voice heard, and also for some new members like Ethiopia that have joined. And I think that's also something interesting to think about in terms of developing countries also being given a voice in a country like Russia.
There are some who have said this may be a challenge to the G7, given the expansion of the BRICS, including some other African countries like Egypt and Ethiopia. Do you share that opinion?
I think it's a challenge ideationally. It's a challenge diplomatically to some of the established order, to the neoliberal orthodoxy, essentially the dominant framework established by the U.S. and its allies. But we also have to be realistic that even within BRICS, not all members are equal. China is not at the same level as Ethiopia. Russia as a military power is not at the same level as South Africa. Brazil is not at the same level as United Arab Emirates. So there's even a division within that regional framework. But I think the BRICS should really work to put together their collective economic, political, and security interests to be able to provide a challenge to the established orthodoxy. But I think it's still going to be some time before BRICS can stand as a very clear alternative to the U.S. hegemony internationally. And I'm specifically, for example, thinking around, you know, the use of the dollar as a reserve currency. There's been a lot of talk of BRICS coming up with an alternate currency, and that's just not worked out. And then also within the movement, they have to figure out a way where all BRICS members can also have an equal say. Right now, obviously, the giants, Russia and China, tend to dominate the BRICS, even though it's supposed to be an alternative forum for more Global South voices to be heard.
There are reports that another 30 countries want to join BRICS or seek closer ties with the club. Some of these are reportedly attending this summit. Do you see the possibility of an expansion of this bloc?
I think that's a delicate question, because expanding the bloc, the options are there. I think it's there's a lot of opportunity just in terms of the numbers and the clout and the profile of the organization. Iran, Egypt, Ethiopia, and the UAE recently joined January 2024. But then we have the other challenge of, you know, if we originally had five members, You know, now it's been expanded with an extra 4 countries, so you have more voices. If you keep adding countries, eventually you'll have too many voices, and I think it affects the ability to develop consensus on issues.
That was David Monda, a professor of political science at City University in New York. He spoke with U.S. Douglas Mpuga. Reconciliation between Egypt and Turkey, the main supporters of the rival powers in Libya, could offer hope for easing tensions between the Libyan factions. Doreen Jones reports from Istanbul.
Libyan oil exports resumed this month after production shut down over a battle to control Libya's central bank, which manages oil exports. The dispute between Libya's two rival administrations was only resolved by intense negotiations. Jalal Hajawi at London's Royal United Services Institute for Defence and Security Studies.
What happened is a very grave crisis which has been partly resolved, but still presents some loose ends, and a lot of players, including armed groups in Tripoli, are trying to kind of take advantage of whatever has happened over the last several weeks. So I'm not describing a scenario of war, but I'm describing a more volatile environment.
But a rapprochement between Egypt and Turkey could offer hope for easing tensions. Cairo backs the Libyan administration in Benghazi of Khalifa Haftar, while Ankara supports a Tripoli-based government of national unity. Last month, during a visit to Ankara, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi pledged to work on Libya with his Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Analysts say this cooperation was key to resolving the latest Libyan crisis. Murat Aslan is with the SETA Foundation for Political, Economic and Social Research, a Turkish pro-government think tank.
Both countries can push the Tripoli-based government or Benghazi-based Khalifa Haftar at least to accept something or come to the least terms that they can agree. So it's a win-win situation for both Egypt and Turkey.
With both the Turkish and Egyptian economies in crisis, the economic benefits of cooperating in Libya are, analysts say, a powerful force behind the country's rapprochement. Libyan security analyst Aya Buwela.
These two countries are very important to both. They've figured out a way to divide spheres and work together. Even in the East now, Turkish companies have cut lucrative deals, infrastructure deals, just as Egypt has. So economy and money drives a lot of these political friendships and rapprochement.
Ankara wants Cairo to use its influence over Haftar to support an agreement it made with the rival Libyan government of national unity to explore what are widely believed to be energy reserves in Libyan waters. Conversely, some analysts say Cairo wants Ankara to support removing the Government of National Unity's Prime Minister, Abdulhamid Dibeba. Despite differences, observers say Cairo and Ankara are committed to cooperation. Again, Jalal Hajawi.
What has already been decided is that they're going to speak on a daily basis. And then at every crucial moment, they're going to make sure Turkey specifically is going to make sure that Egypt is on board.
Given the potentially high economic stakes for both Egypt and Turkey, Libya will likely be seen as an important test of the country's new rapprochement, cooperation that could help ease Libya's deep divide, analysts say. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 23rd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Malawi President Lazaro Chakwera has called on all eligible Malawians to register at large numbers for the ongoing voter registration exercise, which began this week for election in 2025. However, the process is encountering challenges, as some citizens have taken the Malawi Electoral Commission to court over its decision to require national identity cards as the sole form of identification to register. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
a process comes a month after the Malawi Electoral Commission held pilot voter registration in a few districts to test its new equipment purchased for the next year's polls. During the vote, Malawians will elect new president, members of parliament, and local government representatives. In a televised address on the state broadcaster, Chakwera urged Malawians to register in large numbers.
Voting in general elections is your democratic and constitutional right. But for you to enjoy that right, you must first register to vote. Voting in general elections is your civic responsibility. But for you to exercise that responsibility, you must first register to vote.
President Chakwera also says everyone should register regardless of their affiliation.
So whether you already know which candidates you support or have not yet decided, and whether you belong to a political party or not, I call on every one of you who is eligible to vote to register when the voter registration exercise comes to your district.
However, some citizens are protesting in court and pushing for the amendment of the new legislation, which requires national identity cards as the sole form of identification to register with the MEC, the Malawi Electoral Commission. Opposition parties have also expressed concern over the legislation, saying many Malawians do not have national IDs and the requirement could disenfranchise a large portion of the population. Shadrick Namalomba is a spokesperson for the main opposition Democratic Progressive Party.
By the way, the Constitution of Malawi explicitly states that it is the right of each and every Malawian who has attained the age of 18 and above to register and vote. It is their right to vote. No one, not even the MEC, can stop that process.
MEC officials say the registration has started smoothly despite some few challenges. Philip Kamburire is the commissioner for the MEC.
We had some few centers where our gadgets had some challenges here and there, but immediately once we identify gadgets that has got those challenges, they were rectified because we have got the ICT people. They're able to rectify all those things.
In the meantime, President Chakwera is calling up all political and traditional leaders to help encourage their followers to vote and ensure that registration is conducted in a peaceful manner. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
Observers have begun arriving in Botswana to monitor activities ahead of the October 30th general election. On Tuesday, the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, officially launched its mission with a call for peaceful elections. From Haburuni, Nkudise Dube reports.
Tanzania's former Prime Minister Mizengo Pinda leads the SADC Electoral Observation Mission, which joins other groupings from the Commonwealth and the African Union. Pinda says the SADC Electoral Observers Mission is in line with the Regional Bloc's aspiration to hold democratic elections within member states.
When you go to observe an election, first is to get a picture of how prepared are the host countries. So in this case, we are sure that things have been prepared very well. But the second thing, of course, the assurance must go beyond that general statement. We want to be sure that peace is prevailing and the peace will prevail even during the elections.
The SADC has often been criticized for failing to hold errant members to account, with the recent Zimbabwe and Mozambique polls placed as free and fair despite reported irregularities. SADC Executive Secretary Elias Mahosi says the bloc can only recommend and its reports are not binding on member states.
Where matters become very serious, through the secretariat, the chairperson of the organ is entitled by the guidelines to actually bring those issues before a summit, for summit to consider.
Only a handful of political party representatives attended Tuesday's SADC Observer Mission launch. The opposition has alleged there are attempts to rig the poll. Penyo Budale of the Alliance for Progressives, which is running under the opposition coalition Umbrella for Democratic Change, says his party sent Nwan to the meeting as, in their opinion, SADC election observers are compromised.
We didn't find it worthwhile to come to witness this launch of the SADC observer mission because, as you know, they were in Zimbabwe and they gave a report that said that the election ran short of the standards set by SADC and the elections were not free and fair. We met the advance observer mission team and we, you know, told them that we wouldn't find it worthwhile to engage with them until we know what happened to the reports.
Botswana's Foreign Affairs Minister Lemogang Kwape says they will allow observers to carry out their duty unhindered.
And we open our doors. It's a free country. Go every corner of this country and observe. Interact with people and make your observation, which we believe will be independent. And Botswana, as a country, stand ready to receive your comments.
Commonwealth and AU observers arrived in the country last week in time to monitor the advance election for poll workers, soldiers and police, which took place on Saturday. Kondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Press freedom was the key highlight at the Global Leadership Forum launched on Monday here in Washington, D.C. The meeting, which takes place each year, brings mid-career professionals from around the world to explore critical global challenges, Moses Javier Rimana reports.
More than 140 participants attended Monday's meeting, including journalists and human rights defenders under the Humphrey Fellowship Program, a U.S. government-funded program which allows mid-career professionals the opportunity to enhance their leadership skills. This year, media freedom took the center stage. Nkosi Kona Dibiti is a Zimbabwean journalist and founder of a community media organization. He's among the speakers at the forum.
The media plays that watchdog role that allows to raise alarm and let people know that this is what is happening to human rights activists, defenders, or even to the broader society. We have had a lot of media reform. However, there are some concerns in terms of how media's role is in terms of ensuring that journalists themselves are protected from violations, and while at least they are doing their role.
Calls for press freedom comes as Reporters Without Borders released its 2024 report indicating a worrying decline in support and respect for media autonomy and an increase in pressure from the state or other political actors. In Africa, the report indicated that military juntas that seized power in coups in the Sahel, especially in Niger, Burkina Faso and Mali, continue to tighten their grip. Omar Zombre is a veteran journalist and co-founder of a non-profit organization for journalists in Burkina Faso.
There are some countries that are still having some challenges. We want a society that seek for improvement, a society that is seeking for progress. Then we need to see how this society is dealing with freedom of press. Freedom of press is very important. It's one of the metrics of democracy.
Africa remains among worst performing continents in as far as press freedom is concerned, but there are similar problems elsewhere as well. Press freedom is also under threat in Montenegro, a country in southeastern Europe, despite the country's constitution and laws guaranteeing freedom of speech and expression. Bojana Dabovic is a journalist and editor in one of the media houses there who says that some journalists are now transitioning to other professions or are practicing self-censorship due to continued attack and harassment.
Journalists in Montenegro, me included, are facing threats, harassments, even physical attacks, with high-profile cases which have been remained unresolved. I would say that overall Montenegro's press freedom remains fragile, with ongoing challenges that impede a fully independent media freedom.
A recent report from the Committee to Protect Journalists painted a bleak picture for sub-Saharan Africa. It indicates that the number of journalists incarcerated in 2023 rose to 47 compared to 31 in 2022. Next month, the African Union will be commemorating the 10th International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. It comes at a moment between 2006 and 2024 when more than 1,700 journalists have been killed around the world, with close to 9 out of 10 cases of these killings remain judicially unresolved. Moses Abiarimana for Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Across the United States, about 14 million voters are members of unions. But even though their members make up a small part of the American electorate, presidential candidates eagerly seek their endorsement. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports from the western state of Nevada, where unions have a powerful voice in this year's presidential election.
At a rally for Vice President Kamala Harris, excitement among union workers for her plan to end taxes on tips or gratuities that workers receive. Tanny Castrol is a union representative for casino workers.
I know that Vice President Kamala Harris has a plan, a clear plan, to end federal taxes on tips for us service workers here in Nevada. That's right, that's right. And that Donald Trump, pretending he is the tipped worker's savior, is a dangerous lie.
Former President and Republican candidate Donald Trump has also visited the city that relies on the service industry to promote his plan of no taxes on tips for casino dealers, waitresses, and housekeepers. Dee Dee Lima is a Trump supporter.
That is going to be adored by the employees, by all of the employees, particularly that don't have salaries and that they work on tips. That's going to be loved by them.
Trump has also earned the support of the Las Vegas Police Department. Steve Gromis is the president of the Las Vegas Protective Police Association.
The majority of our citizens trust law enforcement. And so if law enforcement says, hey, we believe this person has our best interests at heart, that they're going to keep you safe, that they're going to try and make our economy thrive, that people trust what we say.
Gromis has spoken about Trump's support for law enforcement at numerous rallies.
A man like Donald Trump and his campaign has always stood by us and said, no, I'm not going to bend to the winds of politics.
The endorsement of the tens of thousands of union workers employed in Nevada is eagerly sought by presidential candidates. Vice President Harris also earned the endorsement of the local Teamsters Union, but the National Organization of Freight Drivers and Warehouse Workers declined to endorse either presidential candidate. Some voters here in Nevada see that as an important sign.
Well, they always went Democratic. So now if they're not doing Democratic, that means they must be leaning towards who? Trump.
But the Culinary Workers Union in Las Vegas did endorse Harris. Ted Papageorge is the group's secretary treasurer.
Working class voters are smart. They're not dumb, and they are a little skeptical. But the problem with President Trump is that he lies, and he lies a lot. However, Vice President Harris, this is part of an overall program to tackle the cost of living.
And they're knocking on doors to let voters know.
We're just coming to see for Kamala Harris.
Okay.
Okay.
We're all voting for her.
Claudia Monreal is a member of the Culinary Workers Union.
Big corporations coming in and price gouging us on food, gas, you know, rent. So having, you know, the right candidate in office, you know, telling them the correct information, what I know as facts, that, you know, Kamala's going to be there for us, the middle class, the union members.
Union members here in Nevada, one of just a handful of swing states that decide the presidential election, could end up casting the deciding vote. Catherine Gibson in Las Vegas, Nevada, VOA News.
And that's it for this Wednesday, October 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
This is the voice of America, Washington, ba-ba-ba-zip.